Hello everyone, welcome to this seminar. We're very happy to have Thalia Maggiolo, who's a visiting fellow in the Hellenic Observatory, and Thalia is a researcher affiliated to the Centre Edgar Morin in the École des Hautes-Études in Paris. And she's a cultural and political psychologist who has been working in Greece, but has been working at, who's been trying to combine her field with other more international research. She studied at the University of Athens, Cambridge, Geneva, in a number of other places, completed her PhD on social representations of democracy for Greek youth. Since 2003, Thalia has initiated in Paris at the Fondation Maison des Sciences de l'Homme, an international network on European political psychology. And today she'll be talking about young Greeks and democracy, social representations and imaginaries, and the impact of the crisis. So, about 40 minutes.
Thank you, Rebecca. Since I feel a little bit stressed, I will start with what happened to me yesterday. I was having lunch. There is someone who came and asked me what I do at the restaurant here, the LSE. And when I told him that I work on democracy and representations, he asked me, sorry to be provocative, but why is this important? I mean, why should we... is this making our life better if we know what the young Greeks think about democracy? Well, he's working on people with dyslexia. So for him, something useful could be something more applied. And I started saying something about the importance of abstraction and some sort of abstract notions that could also be called hegemonic social representations. So democracy is part of it. Something that has an axiological dimension, something is related to something good. But somehow different groups and people can create identities that oppose each other, using as a sort of discourse and trying to legitimate themselves by associating to this kind of abstract idea. It could also be economy, and we have been working on economy also as a representation, and it could also be love. When I started this study, it was a few years ago, about 15 years ago. I was younger, and I had the age of the young adults I was interviewing in Greece. So the first study took place in Athens at the end of the 90s with 30 participants following a qualitative logic and methodology. And I will explain what this is. So at the time, Tsimikas was prime minister in Greece with the PASOK, Socialist Party, and a kind of reformist, pro-European perspective. I finished my PhD with these interviews, and in 2008 we had an event that became very important. An adolescent was murdered by a policeman, Alexis Rivoropoulos, and from end 2008 and 2009 there was a sort of upheaval, a lot of revolts in Athens and all the major cities. I thought it was important to ask again this general question. And later, when the crisis started to be felt by the population, I thought, okay, let's see in 2011, when it's not only talk in the media, but... everybody has made the experience of the crisis. So at the time, in 2011, we had, Yorgos Papandreou, when PASOK was again in power, he had already signed the first memorandum. And a few months later, a big movement of Paganakismeni or Indignados were out and were occupying part of Athens, and not only Athens, a major place. Now, because maybe I'm a little bit obsessive, I wanted to continue because from the interactions that I had with different people in Greece, I felt that there was a change after the elections of January 2015, especially in young people. I felt that a lot of people participated and voted, whereas I had the feeling that they were a little bit reluctant. So that was a good moment for me to repeat the study and ask them again about democracy. I sort of followed a ground theory approach, and what this means is that there is a research question to begin with, and then you go to your field and you start gathering data, but this data is another step to question the starting point. So there is a sort of a dialogue between the research question and the field, and also the readings that you do around this question. So people who are doing research in this field, I'm sure they know very well what this is about. And so I started with one question that was, if I tell you the word democracy, what comes to your mind? And the approach that I have in this is that I stay back and allow the interviewee to develop their thinking, a thinking that is a little bit, as Castoriadis has said in French, fait et affaire, which means it is already, it has concluded in some parts, it's crystallized, and other parts are completely floating in a way. So it is observing thinking in the making, and not introduce new ideas, but if a person feels a little bit stuck at some point, maybe repeat a phrase or in a way ask for a clarification. Different types of analysis have been made in, with this data, and but I will explain a little bit. This is the first study with 30 interviews, what were the criteria to choose these participants instead of others? There is no quantitative logic behind. So the idea is to have as many profiles as possible that could have something to say related to the research question. I started with some basic sociological categories, so men and women, people who have not finished school and come from different parts of Greece but live in Athens, came to find a job, others who live in neighborhoods that are considered very, expensive, or the nice areas of Athens, different parts of Athens have different connotations. Exarchia. So I tried to find people living in all these different areas, combining also characteristics. So, for example, it was not enough to live in what was considered a rich area of Athens, but also to have parents who have studied in a very, in a university like, and also the participants have studied abroad, and so in order to think that a person has a sort of higher social status. I was combining certain dimensions. And I didn't want to go to university and ask a colleague, okay, can you find me, 10, 20 people to interview? But I was trying to find them one by one and trying to put myself at the same level. So for those who wouldn't study anything or wouldn't even finish school, I would be someone who was trying to get a note for my class and university, and they would help me to finish. For those who thought that that was completely not important to spend some time for that, I was trying to go as someone who's doing some important research, and so that they would speak to me. I only interviewed Greek citizens because that was what I did the first time, and since a lot of variables changed, I tried to keep something constant to be able to make a comparison. So I don't have the same group of people, but I have the same characteristics, more or less. It was important, the participants were kind of informal, so they were telling me that there was a profile that could be important. If I had people from the South doing, I don't know, being a DJ, and the other one was from the western part of Athens, and different people were telling me that they had a friend who is a long-term unemployed person who doesn't want to find a job and who lives with his parents and is watching TV all day, and so I thought I should find a person like that, so I was looking actively. Or someone who would work for armed forces, a police, because that came up also a lot. So there were some profiles that came up as I was advancing the research. And different lifestyles, divorced, married, single, yes, different sexual orientations. In general, for these people, because I cared about their background also, not only their family, but what their family was doing, voting or not voting, or so all of them have been born after the downfall of the dictatorship in 1974, in the first study, and they have grown up during the Third Republic in Greece, where they have benefited from a period of peace and relative prosperity. They saw two major parties alternating in power. Now, when it comes to the last study that I have just fulfilled because I was for 2 months in Athens, the youngest have experienced the crisis from adolescence, so I think there is a difference here. They have been in the demonstrations for the memory of the adolescent who was murdered. They might have been in the movement of Aganaktis Meni. And I think that there is a change. The three studies together, their lifestyle has more things in common, and the last study is a little bit apart, because you have young people who have been experiencing the crisis from their adolescence, and it's they don't have the same expectations the others had. So those of the first three studies who were raised in the prosperous year have received a lot of pressure from the parents to have some kind of social mobility, because they had everything for themselves, and that's what a discourse that is coming again and again. They had everything, but the objectives that they were supposed to fulfill were unattainable, because there were no better jobs. They couldn't all become civil servants, and they so what they did, even if they had a diploma, for those who were more fortunate, they went for a master's abroad. They came back, and somehow they were held hostage by the parents' generation. were also influencing their voting behavior in a way. There, I have been told of someone who was supposed to represent the Conservative Party of Nea Dimokratia in an area. This is before the crisis, and who voted for the ecologists. So he was there because the parents were there. He was supposed to, and himself, he was voting for another party. Now, it seems that people stay younger for a longer period, but not for biological reasons. This is one strategy to erase a little bit this intergenerational conflict. So you, it was until 24, and then you stay young until 30, and then maybe it will go on. Olivier Galland, there's a French who has worked on youth and what does it mean to be young. He was setting some criteria that were supposed to be, you are becoming an adult when you create a sort of more or less stable family unit in some way, and you also have some kind of stable occupation, you become autonomous. So this is postponed and postponed and postponed. So you continue, instead of feeling a complete failure, for example, in your 30s, without a job and living with your parents, you feel still young and as an adolescent. And this could a little bit avoid conflicts with the parents who also tell you that they give you argent de poche to go have coffee with your boyfriend, your girlfriend, that you cannot invite, actually. But it's like, okay, in a few years I will be, as someone told me, he was 26, I'm too young now to think about voting and participating in the public sphere. When I will be an adult like my father, who's 50, I will start thinking about these issues. So, but Greece is not just the only place this happened, because there are a lot of studies, and Louis Chauvel, who's a French sociologist, has compared intergenerational inequalities in France, UK, Spain, and actually Spain, France, the UK, and Greece. They are some of the countries where there is no social mobility upwards. And well, in France you have all these baby boomers who have had the best of everything, apparently, and they are still everywhere in the parliament, in the Senate. They take all the decisions and they don't let other generations find their way somehow. So they stay young. Now, how do they live, all these participants? Well, they live with their parents if they live in Athens, or with family members. For example, you have a girl from Kalamata in Peloponnesus. She came to study in Athens and she's staying with an uncle and aunt. Or they flat share. Someone who's a hairdresser stays with someone who's trying to become an athlete. And yes, professional athlete, and another person who's a salesperson. Or there is the case of the person who has divorced, and he's 28, and they still live with his mother. So the former wife has to live also with his mother because she cannot find another place, and they have to pay back the loan that they have taken for a house where they will never live because they don't want to.
With her ex-husband's mother?
Exactly. And with the ex-husband. And this is kind of complicated for all like personal relationships. Yes, and he comes from Patras, and he's now in Athens. Now, those who work, they work in the family business. It could be a cafe, it could be I check the elevators in different buildings. And well, even those who come from families who are better, have a better social network or social capital, for example, they got some kind of internship in a ministry, but then they couldn't have a permanent position because now things are a little bit more complicated. And this person is still unemployed, living with her parents. And now, there is a change in the last study because the family still have to stay together until the children are 30 years old, but sometimes the parents are unemployed now, and it's the children who work two jobs and they bring some money to the family. So there is a certain change, and sort of this intergenerational conflict diminishes a little bit, and not only financially. Now, what do people say about democracy? There are a lot of things. I want to focus on one. I found that, analyzing the interviews after having transcribed them and read them several times, that there are in a way two logics that we have called with two linguists in at the École des Études, two social logics. One that is sort of well, we called it a dualistic logic, all or nothing, related to a sort of metaphysical representation. People oppose something that is ideal to something that they live in their reality. So democracy, for example, is composed by certain elements: freedom, equality, and justice. Everywhere and like in all the possible spheres of their experience, and all the time. So you wake up in the morning, and the people you interact with have to interact in a democratic way in the family. They cannot impose that you do something that you don't want. The couple, the parents and the children, the friends together, how they decide about certain things. At school, at the university, at the working place, or not working place, or in the streets. If people are sort of looking at you and they don't approve of the way you're dressed, this is a lack of democracy also. So democracy comes in the private sphere, and something that they call their microcosm. And the microcosm is the private sphere and every place where they are important. Where they feel that they count. And for the first studies, the public sphere is not where they count. So the people at the end of the 90s, the young people, they think that in the public sphere they are just not existent. And this is related to the fact that they are not socially and financially integrated. They are not autonomous. So they have this metaphysical democracy is something so perfect that can never exist, and you just are stuck with a reality that is bad, and then either you become a victim because you cannot expect anything better, or you can yourself not respect certain democratic principles because after all it's not possible. The other logic, it was the minority that followed this this idea, is a more interpersonal representation where you can build up from something. So if you have respect of rights, this is something already. If you don't have equality, well, it's not perfect, but we could say that you have a sort of imperfect democracy. It's still democracy, this thing. And even if I cannot act in the public sphere, I can do something in my small world. I can respect my friends, and we can deliberate together about something. So this is a sort of logic that I found in the first study. And in a way, it is still present in the following studies. These are examples of what I mean by that. So there's in this dualistic and metaphysical democracy where you have a kind of perfect ideal related to the meaning of life and beauty and everything that is good. On the one side, you have all that is good, and on the other side, you have reality, the human beings, the way people act in their everyday life, that ruins the perfection of this idea. And the way they speak also is full of positions. The police should protect the citizens and the judges, but everything is corrupt. Now, the other style is someone who is speaking in this consensual way, and where if you have certain elements that compose democracy, you could consider that you have a democracy. And you could... but this is the first step. So there is someone who's not very active in the public sphere. At the same time, she finds a way to reconcile this, saying that after all, she's doing something in the right direction. So there's no... It's not an all or nothing logic. Now, the difference between the first three studies and the one that I concluded, even though I have not had the time to analyze properly the interviews, to begin with, I think that the participants feel better than those at least in 2011 and even those in the 90s. End of the 90s, the majority felt that something was wrong, but they didn't know what it was and in what direction they should act. And there could be two or three who were members of political parties, like a communist or another one who was in the right Nea Dimokratia, but they were not the majority. Even if they had a political orientation, they were kind of lost. Now these participants, they feel important in the public sphere. They have been present. Even if those who wanted to change are not happy with the way things go, they also feel that, for example, they have two jobs and their family, the father is unemployed. So they are not as useless as the people at the end of the 90s felt, where they felt guilty to receive all the money from the parents, but they somehow didn't manage to satisfy the parents' wishes. So for me, and this is a question, not a result, it is a possibility that intergenerational inequalities diminish and more traditional inequalities become more important. So those who have more and those who have less. They also, the participants now seem to have found a reason why there is a crisis. For others, it's international capitalism, the role of Europe. For others, it's the Greeks who are irresponsible and they have been influenced by populism. But they have spent time thinking, reading, and they, independently of if we agree or not with whatever the result is, they seem to have an idea. So now they are ready to act, and there are some who are ready to fight. I was told that if for someone who is volunteering, helping refugees who arrive in Lesbos now, she told me that She feels that democracy is under attack, and if that's, that goes on and there was a war, she's ready to defend her ideas. But she was not in a state of distress and panic as the people in 2011 that I've seen. So political ideologies are present as sort of guiding principles. But I have found ideas circulate, for example, the idea that equality is to give to each person according to their needs, that I consider something that would be more related to the left, is something that was expressed with a lot of conviction by someone who will become a priest and who's doing his master's on the analysis of the Old Testament. And in general, he was for a kind of hierarchical organization of society. Then there are two people who insisted on the importance of tirage au sort, clerosy.
Draw
for different positions as civil servants. And I would expect them to be in the left. And they were actually active members of Nea Dimokratia, the conservative party. One was representing this party at his university, and the other one was helping one of the leader candidates, so really close. Others started to question the idea that democracy is the best system, and but most of them, even those who said that they were indifferent, they were thinking that it's very important to participate, to vote, and to have a position, even discussing in the social media. So, yes, I think that the big question for the people of the last study was like the difference between living and surviving, and they were thinking that democracy is related to living. Living a fulfilling life and becoming a citizen and not surviving somehow, no matter how. But those who felt that more or less we have some democracy, they were 9 out of 31. And what they have in common with the other studies is that they are the ones who feel more integrated because they work already in a field that seems to be prosperous somehow. So the armed forces, they feel security, policemen. They work for a multinational who seems to be doing very well. They have a good salary and they travel in Algeria or Turkey or Jordan. They will work for Google. And they come from backgrounds where the parents don't have a high education level, but they have somehow some fortune. They have a home. They have they have migrated in South Africa, and now they are back, and they have some sense of security. So, and for most of them, democracy is absent or corrupt, and they, but. They still feel more empowered in a way than the young adults of the end of 90s. Yes, I think that's more or less what I wanted to say. Yes, so that they feel more confident for their role in the public sphere. And yes, and thank you very much.